Facing challenges and overcoming setbacks is part of doing business. Whether you have the expertise to survive them or not could mean the difference between success or failure. Welcome to We Are Women, featuring revealing conversations that provide invaluable insights into the success secrets of female masterminds. A must-listen for every entrepreneurial woman. Now here's your host, Janine Vosper.
Hi, Janine Vosper, and welcome to this episode of the We Are Women podcast. I have Elizabeth Backman with me today. Now, before I go any further, I'll tell you a little bit about Elizabeth. I want to remind you to subscribe to, if you're listening to this on your podcast channel and you haven't subscribed yet, please do that. Or go to YouTube, Janine Vosper, and you can watch the episodes as well. So you get to see the faces behind the voices. So Elizabeth is the go-to person for advanced level training in speaking, presentation skills, and leadership. You can understand why I have got her on today. We're going to be so connected with the ideas that we want to present, I am sure. With a lifetime of perfecting the art of presenting, she helps high-level clients show up as a leader who should be followed, promoted, or hired, thus getting the recognition they deserve. A sought-after speaker and strategist in Silicon Valley, nationally and internationally. Elizabeth works with leaders and influencers who need to become concise and compelling presenters. She helps them present as smart, down-to-earth, loose, friendly, even funny. I love the funny part because that's sort of my road I go into, Elizabeth. Still be taken seriously. Elizabeth is the host of international podcast, Speakers Who Get Results, where she interviews experts on presentation skills, leadership, visibility, and cross-cultural communication. I find this fascinating. I want to go into this. Having spent 30 years directing such luminaries as Luciano Pavarotti and Placido Domingo, I think I've got those pronunciations correct.
Close enough.
In more than 50 operas around the world, Elizabeth brings a wealth of tools to help business professionals become respected presenters. I had not read this part here, Elizabeth. This blows me away. Fluent in 5 languages. Mm-hmm. Like most Australians, we struggle with one, English. Fluent in 5 languages, she brings her global experience to her clients. Welcome, Elizabeth. My first thing is I have to ask about the 5 languages. So we chatted earlier and you said you spend winters in Austria. So I'm assuming it's English and German.
So thank you, Janine. First of all, let me say thank you so much for inviting me onto your podcast. When I looked you up, I said, oh, this is going to be a good one. We're going to find fun stuff to talk about.
Absolutely.
I grew up learning French, or was really lucky to get French in school early on. But I always loved listening to the opera. I didn't know I was going to ever work in opera, but I'm the kind of person who can listen and mimic. I don't always get the grammar right, but I can make the sounds. So, I learned music through more by listening, more by ear than by reading. And it's the same sort of talent. And you either have it or you don't. So I was born, luckily, able to mimic languages. So once I got pretty good in French, Italian was easy, and I wanted to understand what they were saying in the opera. I didn't realize that some of the operas that I used to sing along with were in 19th century Italian, which is not the same as modern Italian. But that's a mistake that people make a lot. So English, French, Italian, German, and then also Spanish. So I worked for a company in Puerto Rico for 5 years and got pretty good at Spanish. And particularly when I directed a show in Argentina, and they said, could you go to Buenos Aires for like 2 weeks from now? I said, you bet. I'm going to learn that opera. I'm going to be there. You got it. Only to realize that I was in the state of Buenos Aires, not the city of Buenos Aires. I was actually in the capital city of the state of Buenos Aires, which is not the same as the famous city. And they were supposed to have a translator and they forgot. So I wound up, my Spanish got pretty good pretty fast. And oddly enough, when I was then trying to manage in Spanish, one of the assistants had what had been had worked in Germany for a while. So if I couldn't figure out how to say it in Spanish, I would say it in German and she would translate it into Argentinian Spanish, which is very different from the Mexican and Puerto Rican Spanish I had learned. So what I love about that is I'm a total word nerd. I mean, I love languages and I'm all about how do people talk? And so I get all excited about why different words mean different things and what's the cultural influence that caused people to say it this way instead of the other way. And that now translates into the work I do helping women, especially executive women, communicate. I always say you can shift the way you're perceived by shifting the way you communicate. It's through my experience with languages and presentation skills that informs the work I do now.
And that's a fascinating aspect coming in from that space, because it's with different languages, there's different emphasis on different parts of the word. And that can make such a big difference when you're presenting as to the tone that you use, but also the emphasis that you place on a certain aspect of a word, because it can change the whole meaning of it, really, and how it comes across to the audience.
Well, also, it's, I always think that one of the key principles is to use what I call strategic empathy, which is put yourself in the shoes of your listeners and speak to them in a language they can understand, especially if you want a result. You know, I called my company Strategic Speaking for Results. If you do what you need to do to get the result you need. So one of the talks I do is called Second Language First Impression. And one of my side specialties is helping people who have to present in English at some international conference, and it's not their first language. It might be their second or third language. And, you know, I help with that. And I have to make sure that, you know, my American assumptions, they may have learned UK English, you know, English from someone from Britain. And so there are different assumptions there too. And I always have to pay attention, but it's fun. It's like the dance. It's like, okay, is this the puzzle? How do you then get someone to understand you because you're talking a language they can hear?
I love it. And each of the different Englishes are different. And you said you've been to Australia before, that you would find that a lot of Australians use euphemisms, and you'd be going, I imagine you're thinking, what on earth are they talking about? And having to figure out what it means, and that it isn't an insult. It's actually recognizing you as a friend, but the way they say it, if it was in America, it would be offended.
Well, and just as basic as, well, look, we are in a global workforce now. So in business, if you're larger than just a mom and pop store on the corner, you're going to have people from multiple countries. You know, we're a very international world these days, especially in business. And I work a lot with people in tech, people in law, international law, and a lot of people who are used to working in global teams. A lot of work with women in pharma, for instance. And so they'll have meetings in five different time zones. How do you recognize where people are coming from? How do you recognize what's going to work for them and doesn't work for you, you know, for that matter? Or just don't use a baseball metaphor if you're talking to to Europeans. Hello. And there are so many people who grow up in one culture and they think that's anything. So they'll use the metaphor that makes sense to them, and it doesn't work. You know, or the other one that gets me is I'm not a big TV person. So a lot of my friends use metaphors from US TV shows.
Right.
And, you know, and the European people go, huh? What? You know, one more phrase.
Football, Elizabeth. So if you're in the States, football is
it's one thing. Yes.
Gridiron football. In Europe, obviously, football is what we call here in Australia soccer.
It's, uh-huh.
And in Australia, depending on which state you're in, when you say football. So if you are in Victoria, you're most likely talking about Australian rules. If you're in Queensland or New South Wales, you'd be talking about rugby league. But the term football in different places really does mean something completely different, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, even just I had a Swedish client who we were chatting and she said, you know, I never know where to ask. I guess I can ask you, what does down the rabbit hole mean? And I said, Alice in Wonderland. And she said, yeah, there's some Disney movie about Alice in Wonderland. Well, if you grow up in an English-speaking country, you probably read Alice in Wonderland as a kid. You probably heard the story of Alice in Wonderland growing up. But she grew up with Pippi Longstocking. She never read Alice in Wonderland. She didn't know the story. So she didn't understand about what it means to fall down the rabbit hole like Alice does and find herself into a whole new world and doesn't come back for months, which is what happens to me when I look at Facebook. So
I think that's a worldwide phenomena. That's really interesting. For you, particularly if you're speaking to a lot of different international clients, mm-hmm. I work with a lot of English isn't first language people in Australia, but most of them come from a Chinese or Indian background.
Yes.
And not mm-hmm. necessarily a European. Most people who come to Australia speak English, but they've usually learnt it off American television shows, which is quite different than English. Yeah. And it's hearing. When I'm the focus for me always is the audience. It's no matter what you're doing, it's the audience. It's not about who you are, what you're delivering. It's always about, is this relevant for the audience? And can they hear and understand what mm-hmm. I'm saying? And can the message get across, which is exactly what you're talking about, no matter who the audience is, mm-hmm. is ensuring that those principles are the primary considerations for every mm-hmm. single presentation, because if they can't, it's no use doing it if the audience isn't going to hear it. I've got one coming up, which is a little country town in a bit of the outback, a few hours from where I am here. And it's about community and resilience, but mm-hmm. they want it to fit in with the Christmas in July event, and they want it to be humorous and engaging. So it's a completely different way of having to look at it, because that's the audience. They're all country people and they've been through all of the disasters, and they come back with a lot mm-hmm. of resilience, but they it's about helping build community. So it's a very different presentation than mm-hmm. what I would do if I was standing in front of a government department.
For instance, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. So that audience.
And I would also say most of my clients are in the corporate world. So I actually spend more time helping people learn how to talk to their managers or be heard in a meeting than I do helping people with keynote speeches. I love helping with keynote speeches, but that's really a 6-month process. Whereas often it's just I get a call and somebody says, can you get them to listen to me? And I said, Well, I can try. They might or they might not, but there's certainly things that you can do to see, to make your voice be heard, which is why my motto is getting women's voices heard in places of power.
Love it. Yeah.
Because so often the people I'm dealing with are women who are being talked over or ignored, or they have a seat at the table, but they still aren't being listened to. And some of that is bias, but some of that is also, I believe, now following this thread here, is that women are taught to speak in one way and men are taught to speak in another. I should say, women are taught to speak and listen in one way, and men are taught to speak and listen in another. And there's some brain science behind it, but it boils down to men's language and women's language. And it's not that binary. I guess there's a whole spectrum in between. But the traditional definition is men's language and women's language. And I see that if you just think of it as a translation problem, as opposed to, oh, men, they never listen. And oh, women, they go on and on and on, and they never get to the point. Both of which are probably pretty fair things to say.
Right, look,
But
I
if you,
have to laugh. I'm going to just interrupt. We'll come back.
yeah.
My husband will ask me, do you want a cup of tea? And we've been together, married 45 and together for about 47. And I'll go, do I want? Oh, hang on, I'm in the middle. He said, just a yes or no is
Yes,
the
exactly.
answer. I
Yeah,
probably do
okay.
that once a day, just a yes or no.
Yes, I've been often told to just say it. Don't do this. Well, so what are you planning to do at this point? Because, if you did have time, just say it. So, I teach this. And I fall into the trap all the time.
And it is, and that's one of the things I love working with women as well, and helping them step into the power of their voice and their power of their words is to, because women are often seen, particularly by other women, unfortunately, if they step into that power, they're often seen as bitchy and that it comes across wrong and other women judge them, so women tend to pull back a bit rather than finding a voice that's strong and firm and just owning that they have a right to those to be able to share what they want to share.
Yeah, if they object to the way you speak, in some ways that's their problem. And you can do something about it. There are different definitions of what's polite, of course. I married a German, so I've got a whole German family, and that's why I live in Austria half the year, two quarters of the year. And I had to learn that I, when someone's telling me to do something in German, they just order you. And I used to say, why, I would get offended until I realized that English, especially women's English, uses all sorts of helper words. Would you please be so kind? Would you, could you suppose, do you suppose you could do this for me? And the Germans will say, do it. Because the way the language works. And so the Americans that I work with, they say, oh, those Germans, they're so rude. And the Germans and Austrians I work with that I train, they say, why do you have to use all these wimpy, wishy-washy words? Why don't you just say, Americans, they're going to take 15 different sentences to say one thing. And it is the way we are socialized as children, and it's the cultural assumptions.
That's a great point. Look, I admit here now, when I'm using AI, I have a great relationship with ChatGPT, and I will go, "Hi, Chatty, please." Now that's even to
Aha.
AI.
Ah, okay.
I do get good responses though. We build up a relationship by
I says, I've
artificial
never
intelligence.
actually addressed ChatGPT that way, but yeah, okay.
I know a few friends that do the same thing as well. I figure if that when AI takes over the world, that I'll be one of the ones that it will recognize as respect
Yeah,
or
right.
something. But it's exactly what you're saying. It's just I'm just trained to do that.
Yeah, right.
And now I'm doing it with artificial intelligence. I want to know more about your, get being so successful in that opera business, I suppose, industry. That was music your background, and then, was that a women's environment? How did
No, it wasn't a woman's
you?
environment. So I like to think I've been dedicated to the art of great presentation since I first walked on stage at the age of 5. And afterwards, I heard my mom tell her friends that I was the best damn bunny rabbit ever to grace the stage of the Hillside School. And I thought, ah, I love this. This is what I'm going to do. And then I realized later that I was actually a better director than I was an actor. So I moved into directing theater and went from that into opera. I grew up listening to opera, and it wasn't until after college that I moved to New York City. I decided I'd rather be the small fish in the big pond than a big fish in a small pond. And realized that there were all these young, small, struggling opera companies. There were places you could start. And so I worked my way up through the ranks. My first job was literally sweeping the floor, driving the truck, and being 50% of the staff, up to directing at the Metropolitan Opera and internationally. So,
Congratulations.
I went through all the stages. And then I hit a glass ceiling. And that's where that also informs what I do now is that I wanted to run an opera company and I knew I'd be good at it. And the singers I worked with, my colleagues, all said, wow, you'd be great. Oh, yes, go do it. Any company you run, I'll be there. What I didn't realize at the time was that so for about 3 years, I applied every time there was an opening, 3 or 4 times a year. I was always on the short list, always number two or number three, and I always saw the job go to a man. And from time to time, it was a man who wasn't as qualified as I was. I did recognize it was a bias. What I didn't recognize is that my glass ceilings were internal as much as external, and I wasn't marketing myself right. And so that I should have been, I didn't sit down and think about who actually makes the decision to hire a general director and artistic director. It's the board of trustees. I should have been marketing myself to them, and I didn't realize that. And also, this is also a woman thing, like my clients tell me this all the time because I went through it, was I didn't realize I could get help. I thought I had to figure it out myself. And I didn't realize until I started doing the training that I do now, the presentation skills training, being trained as a coach, that, oh, I could have gotten help with this if there had been somebody like me coaching me at that point. I might still be running an opera company because I hit the glass ceiling. The message is, as in so many industries, there are lots of women up to a certain point. And then sort of in corporate talk, you could say vice president and C-level. It's then the women drop off. Sometimes the women walk away because they're so tired of not being heard. And this is the problem that I solve. Because if there's someone who's walking away from a job because she's so frustrated, when actually it's a translation problem, then if I could, quitting's expensive. It's expensive for the company and it's expensive for the person. So if you're quitting over a misunderstanding, that's what breaks my heart.
That's such a good point about getting someone to help. I mean, that's something that we both do is assist people in solving their problems, whatever those problems might be. And I've done exactly the same, Elizabeth. I've invested, tens of thousands of dollars
Me
in
too.
getting myself to this level that I am now, because there, if I hadn't done that, I'd be still sitting back where I was 20 years ago, probably still in a job doing something that I didn't enjoy at all, instead of, having the opportunities and the freedoms and doing what I love, but also living my values by assisting other people to achieve those goals as well. And it's so important that, and I find this with women all the time. If I actually market to women, but most of my private clients at the moment are men. It's really interesting, and that's one of the marketing things that I like to talk to people about. What I find, though, is men will go, you know what, I need this. I'm prepared to invest in myself. I find women go, well, the kids need to go on that overseas school activity, or there's always something else instead of themselves. And I'm going to call every woman on it until you put yourself first and realize that you are worthwhile to invest in, then you are still always going to be putting everyone else first, and then doing exactly what you said, giving up.
Yeah, well, when and what I see happening is that you put everybody else first, and so you swallow your frustration and swallow it and swallow it until you explode. And then you say, so forget it, I'm out of here, or you scream at somebody, or you scream at your partner, or you scream at your kids, and they're going, "Where did that come from?" And that's the Of I blame our foremothers. I don't think anybody does this on purpose. I think we are socialized to always be nice, never ask directly. That's, do you want a cup of tea? Yes or no. That's the other side of that. So many times, I have a client who says, "I get passed over for promotion. They're ignoring me. I wanted that job. They should have known." And I said, "Did you actually ask?"
Should have known. I love that. Should have known.
But of course, if you don't get help, if you don't get help, if you don't learn how to really express yourself and to learn that that you don't have to do it alone, then then you explode eventually. And often I find, most of the time when I'm talking, I talk about men's language and women's language. And I should probably clarify that at this point, is that that's a cliche. It's not that binary. And actually, over the last 20 years or so, the last 40 years, but really the last 20 years, the definitions are breaking down. Well, I think of it as single focus thinkers and multi-focus thinkers. So you've got the single focus thinkers who are traditionally men, historically men, but not always. A lot of women are single focused, or single focused when they're in the middle of a project, or single focused if you want to rise in an organization, because Western business was built on single focus principles. So it's great. That's how you get things done. But the disadvantage is that then you fall into tunnel vision. It's really easy to miss important things. And on the other hand, you've got the multi-focus thinkers, who are the relational thinkers, who see the world in a whole web of relationships. And they're the ones that can keep five ideas going at once. And they're the ones that will see the side issue that will derail a project. And they try to tell the single-focus person, "Hey, before we put in all this time and money into developing the new app, our competitors have one that's already on the market. Why are we reinventing the wheel?" Which actually happened to a client of mine, and her boss had this great idea for the new app and he didn't want to hear it. So he transferred her to another department. And they spent hundreds of hours and thousands of dollars to create a fancier version of the app that the competitors had made. And nobody wanted it. They couldn't sell it. So there's all that money and time down the drain because he was so focused on his baby.
Right.
So really what we need is both. We need single focus thinkers and multi-focus thinkers. And the multi-focus thinkers often need the single focus thinkers to say, stop, cut to the chase. What are you trying to tell me? And the single focus thinkers need to know that the relational thinkers around them, the downside of the relational thinking is if everything's a relationship, then any challenge or rejection feels like personal one. Feels like they're insulting you personally. And where actually they might just be challenging you. Many boys are raised. Thank you, ancestors. Many boys are trained to compete, and you work out your ideas by putting it out there. Somebody shoots it down, and then you make it better, and you put it out there again.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had so many situations where when a client finally goes and talks to her male colleague and says, why are you criticizing me all the time? He says, I'm trying to help you. I'm trying to help you work out your idea better by making you figure out how to defend it. And, you know, I like you. I'm trying to help. And she thinks, oh, you just hate me and you're trying to knock me down. So we have all these stories in our heads. Yeah. And this is where I get into, if we only learned how to, actually, the way I like to think of it is single focus thinkers speak Spanish, multi-focus thinkers speak Italian. And if you're going to speak Italian to a Spaniard, they're going to understand more or less what you have to say. But it really is a different language and different words mean different things. So for anything important, you want to get a translator, but at least you're aware that it's two different languages.
Mm.
And the problem with modern life is that we're speaking the same words, but we're using two different languages and we don't. It is the great communication breakdown that is so common. We take it for granted and it doesn't have to be that way. So that's my mission. Is to help.
I love that. I would never have considered that focus, but that just makes so much sense. And as you're talking, I'm thinking, applying it to myself as we all do. And I'm thinking, you know, when I'm training, when I'm sort of in my own space, I'm very much a single focus person.
Yep.
Right? But since I do a lot more coaching now, I shift into that multi-focus because I have to give the client the opportunity to have the ideas instead of me. So it's a very different language for me.
It was something I had to learn directing operas, was to give the singers a framework and then let them work it out.
Mm-hmm.
That was a hard one for me because I'm an oldest child. I'm kind of bossy, you know, and
I'm an oldest child too, Elizabeth, and I can understand.
So we're right, aren't we? We know this.
I had an epiphany the other day. I can be opinionated, and I just asked my husband, but what I said to this group, mastermind group I was running, if I'm not doing that, if I'm not giving ideas, if I'm not assisting, if I'm not broadcasting my beliefs, ideas, it means I don't care. So if you don't hear from me doing that, it means I no longer care about you. And it was an awareness for me, because I can be pushing on ideas, but it's only because I want people to have better health, to think differently, to achieve better results, to, you know, a whole lot of things. And not that I'm right all the time, although, as we said, older children, we tend to be. It's that I just want people to get the best results. And I did, I realized that if I'm not doing it, it means I don't care about you. So please accept that if I'm doing it, I care. I care a lot.
Well, and is the best, what's the definition of the best results? That was another one I had to learn. It's, you know, my definition of success might not be theirs.
Right.
Again, strategic empathy, put yourself in the shoes of your listeners.
Yeah.
What do they really want? And I have a client now who's trying to decide what she wants to do. And I finally said, she lives in Spain, and I finally said, look, you know you want to take a trip. You're going to either go to Paris or Lisbon. Once you decide that, I can get you there. But you have to decide which direction you want to go. I can't do that one for you. You have to do that. And to let her then decide, do I drive to Paris or do I drive to Lisbon? You know, then I can give you directions, but decide where you're going first. Again, that's why I called my company Strategic Speaking for Results.
Yes.
What's the result you want? You know, and maybe you just want that promotion because you think you should be promoted. So if you want that promotion, what's the impact you could make? Mm. Are you looking for a promotion because of pride? I don't say that one out loud, but you know, for you. Or are you looking for a promotion because of the impact you can make if you have a bigger megaphone?
Why can't you say pride, though? That's it.
I'm
does
usually
that challenge
gentler than
too many women?
I'm usually gentler than that, unless they're really stubborn. Then I say, that sounds like pride. And I think that's just me. If someone tells me I'm just acting out of pride, that really annoys me. So I don't like being told I'm too proud. I like to think that I'm strong and authentic and thoughtful. But sometimes they have to be reminded to slow down.
Yeah, I don't hear that word proud or pride. I don't hear it.
I'm proud of what I have accomplished.
Yes.
And I'm proud of the work I do, and I am proud of the transformation that people go through. You know, one client, a client a couple of weeks ago texted me and she said, oh my God, they called me into the executive committee meeting because the CFO said, wait, we need Shirley in here. This is her expertise. They never did that before. She'd been with them for 3 years.
Fantastic.
And they finally, because of the work we've been doing, positioning her, for her to say, bring me in early on, because I can't just implement what you decide. I actually know stuff that's going to affect this decision. And it worked. And she texted me. She said, oh my God, they answered. They invited me in to the process so I could say, yes, and if you do this, this is going to be a consequence that they hadn't thought about.
I love it. I think that's exciting. And that's one of the most exciting things when I get people contact me with the results that they've had, you know, something that's popped up for them that's been really how they measure success. And it's just brilliant. And there was something I was going to mention about what you were saying then, and it's gone, but I'll come back to it. I'm positive. The pride thing. And yes, very much proud, being proud. And that's something that's so important for women, to be proud of what you've achieved, to be proud of, you know, whatever your role is. It might be your parenting role or your business role, whatever hat you've got on, be proud of the success that you've achieved with that. One of the things, and have you ever heard of the tall poppy syndrome?
Oh, yes. The tall poppy
syndrome. So in Australia, you do not raise your head.
Ah, yes. Okay.
It very much, the analogy that I have seen is that in America, if you buy a brand new car, you park it on the front driveway, you're out there washing it, everyone knows that you've got a brand new car. In Australia, you'll tend to get the brand new car, put it in the garage and pull down the door because you just, it's a different space. So that's that pride. Hence why I asked the question about it. It's, you just don't, part of it is just don't raise your head and say, look at me, because, and, you know, we've got some elections by the time this is, would have gone to air, we would have probably decided on the new next Prime Minister of Australia. That they're quick to knock people down all the time rather than build it up, which is part of that learning from your parents and learning from society as well, which is a really tough place to come back from and say, hey, you know what? I'm really good at this and I need to have a voice in the room, as you did with that client.
I think what I'm thinking of is some of my younger clients who are very ambitious and they want that title without thinking about what are they going to do if they get it. And usually they don't stay with me very long because they're really about, I want that title rather than if I'm in that position, I can make a bigger difference. Not servant leaders, but leaders they want the title just for them to be important. That's the kind of pride I'm talking about.
Yeah. I know when I worked as a general manager of sales for a multi-million dollar company, so what you'd call in the US a VP position, yeah. was the owner of the business. And then there was somebody that ran the office. I ran the sales and one person ran distribution as well. And part of that was, that's really nice. I mean, I left school at 15, you know, that was, well, to get to that position. But the main part of it was, I need the office and the warehouse to support my sales team. And I need the conduit for that.
Yes.
That was what I saw my role as, more than, as well as assisting clients. But that was the role. And that was where I had the influence. And that was the hard thing to leave it, because I knew that they weren't going to have that space. So yeah, interesting. And is there anything you want to cover before we go and find out final 3 points we want to take away?
Well, what I find is that if you think about single focused and multi-focused, and you can check my podcast, which ran from 2019 to 2024, and we've just finished it now. The final episode explains this concept. I don't actually explain what to do about it. I just talk about the concept, but maybe I should have, I don't know. But if you recognize the listening style and the thinking style of the person you need to get to listen to, you know, what do you want them to do? What do you want them to believe about you? Then you can shift the way you are perceived. And what I find often is that women will say, why do I have to shift? Why don't the men shift? Why don't those stick in the muds shift? And the answer is the multi-focused thinkers are the adaptable ones.
Mm-hmm.
And in some ways, if you think historically, we're the ones who had to be adaptable. The single focus thinkers can change if they know that it's a problem and they know that they need to, but it's harder for them. So I go for, get them to listen to you first. Get them to listen to you and respect you first. And then you can say, you know, I'm going to need acknowledgement from you because I am a relational thinker. So I need to know that you've heard me. Or I think I would be the great person for this next role, for this manager position. What do you need from me to make that happen?
Right question.
Which is, instead of me just telling them or hinting, you could do that. Quick story, my client Maria worked for a software firm in Silicon Valley, and she, there was a big project coming up, and she thought she should run it. And so she went to her client, her manager, Jason, and said, and she wrote this proposal. and sent it to him. But instead of directly saying, I would like to run the new project, she just had the title, I think this will interest you, and then attach it to the email. And Jason, who was single focused, he was working on something else. He saw that and he went, oh, yeah, I'll get back to it. And of course, he didn't. And Maria then sweated blood and chewed her fingernails. And finally, after a week, she said, what did you think of my proposal? And Jason said, what proposal? And, you know, then she was a good girl. And she said, oh, well, you know, I'll send it again. But inside, she was furious. And she told other women about it. And they all said, it's true. He hates you. Must be terrible. You got to quit. Fortunately, one of them knew me and said, talk to Elizabeth first. And that's where I said, did you actually ask for the promotion? And she realized she had not done it. And she'd gone and talked to him while he was single focused on something else. So he didn't really hear her.
Mm.
So she rewrote the email and submitted it. She booked time with him. And then she submitted it. Here's my proposal. Let's discuss this at our meeting. So he knew what he was supposed to listen for. Mm-hmm. He knew she was coming to ask for something. And he said, wonderful, brilliant. I love it. Absolutely. And so she got promoted. She was ready to quit. But when she asked and when she realized that she didn't hint she actually asked, she got the job, she got the promotion, and she got the recognition. But she came so close to having lost it all.
Yeah. And it's just asking. And we do forget to ask. And as a sales coach as well myself, that's one of the
things,
you know, that people forget to do. They go through a whole process and then they forget to ask for the sale. They get it's a whole nother conversation. Elizabeth, what three takeaways do you want people to really remember from the conversation? There's been so much we've covered and so much value that the listeners are going to take away. What three points particularly do you want them to focus on?
So the three points would be, I think, pay attention to whether you are single-focused or multi-focused, or if you're single-focused at times and multi-focused at other times, so that you recognize that. And then think about your direct supervisor. And even if you're at C-level, you're reporting to the board. So, you know, who are the people who that you want to have them do something for you? What do they care about? And then speak to them in a language that they can understand. And there's a lot of supporting. If you follow my LinkedIn, I write about this all the time. So there's a lot of information there. The other thing is to, we didn't even talk about the expert trap.
No, but the we expert did trap, not. There was so much we could have covered.
Yes. The expert trap is when you're so excited about the stuff that you know that you tell everybody how you got there or how we can do the next thing instead of telling them why. I think of it as too much how, not enough why. Always, always, always think about what's the benefit. Why should they care? Here's the problem. Here's the solution. Here's the benefit. Here's why it matters. And then give the details. If you know all the details, you might know all this, but what do they really need to know? What are maybe three things they need to know? No more than that. You can give them the background if they want it. Mm-hmm. But the human brain is mostly only going to take in one thing at a time. So give it to people there. And then we talked a little bit about the language. If you're in an international situation and people for whom English is not their first language, slow down and enunciate.
Mm-hmm.
I learned this from the opera singers, working with people with multiple languages. And we would have to decide, most of the time, at least 2/3 of the group was working in their second or third language. At the opera, basically on day one, you get together and you say, who would rather work in English? Who would rather work in Italian? Who would rather work in German? And so everybody gets more or less all three of those languages. Those are the three main working languages. And whichever language the most people speak, that's what you'll use. But that means that 2/3 of the group is working in another language. So slow down, enunciate, pause, which
Oh,
is
I
what I
love
probably
pause.
should have been doing all through here.
Pause is my favorite.
Yes, exactly. Put yourself in their shoes. Use strategic empathy. What are they going to need if they're hearing something for the first time?
Definitely. And that's great. That's so much wonderful advice. Elizabeth, how can people get in touch with you?
So the best, I'm Elizabeth at elizabethbachman.com. You can find me on my website. But the most current stuff is on LinkedIn. And I'm just Elizabeth with a Z and Bachman, B-A-C-H-M-A-N, only one N. And I am, LinkedIn's the best way to reach me. Connect with me on LinkedIn and say that you heard me on Janine's podcast. And
Excellent.
I would be happy to talk to you.
I'd love that, and I'll tag you into some things, but I'll also have all your contact details in the show notes so people can find that. Once again, you can check that out on your favorite podcast channel or on YouTube. You can find all the contact details for Elizabeth. Thank you so much. I have enjoyed our conversation. It's
Thank
always
you.
fun. The
Thank
hour
you.
goes
Indeed,
very
it was an
quick
honor.
as well. And that's another episode of the We Are Women podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Remember to go to JanineVosper.com, book a strategy call, have a discussion about anything that you might be working on or how you want to communicate. And if I can't assist you, I have a full list of people that I can highly recommend. Have a fantastic day, week, month, as I usually say. And I look forward to you joining me on the next episode of the We Are Women podcast.
So, do you feel stuck in a rut in business? Visit speechperfect.com.au and download Janine's free ebook to avoid the five most common stumbling blocks women face in business. It's jam-packed full of tips to overcome the barriers that could be holding you back from the success that you dream your business will be. We would love you to leave a review of today's episode and share this podcast with other women in need of entrepreneurial inspiration. Subscribe to the next episode now and join the We Are Women community.